Hello, and thanks as always for listening to the Chills the Will podcast. On episode 44, it is a pleasure for me to welcome a friend, a former colleague, and the author of My Mother is a Superhero, Mi Mamá es una Superheroína. This is Karen C.J. Charles. C.J. Charles is a native of Los Angeles and a proud child of the 80s and 90s. She is a writer, Spanish teacher, and educational consultant. From an early age, her mother taught her to read and appreciate books. CJ's been story writing since the first grade. My Mom is a Superhero is a love letter to her mother and an ode to supermoms everywhere. She hopes you enjoy getting to know her characters in her debut children's book. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, I am Pete Real, a high school English and Spanish teacher, an avid reader, and an aspiring writer. Thank you for listening to the Chills at Will podcast, in which we explore the visceral beauty of literature and its connection to our culture, our history, and ourselves. All right, welcome. This is episode 44.
44. Wow.
Oh my gosh, right? It is a pleasure today to be joined by Karen C.J. Charles, who I was so lucky to work with back in the day. So not just a former colleague, but a friend, and also a heck of a writer. And we're going to talk about her her work with children's books and writing in Spanish. Thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Like I said, it's a pleasure to talk to a friend.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about your children's book, My Mother's a Superhero, Mi Mamá es una Superheroína.
Got it. Superheroína.
I claim to be a Spanish teacher and a Spanish speaker, but that's a tough one, man, that accent there.
That's a hard word.
That's going to be the main thing we're going to talk about, but I do want to know some of your background. Where'd you grow up? How'd you grow up as far as like a print-rich environment, speaking Spanish, learning Spanish? Is that generic enough?
Oh, it's super generic. It's perfect. Right. Nice. What a lead-in. No, so it's really interesting. So I grew up in Southern California. Both of my parents are from the South, from the New Orleans, Louisiana area. So I grew up in South Central all of my life, but I was exposed to language at such an early age, like in the most organic way ever possible. Mm-hmm. So like you, I'm also a Spanish teacher, right? So we have a lot of that in common. But in the 70s, when I was born, how old I am, I actually had a Spanish babysitter, right? She was of Mexican descent. And so they only spoke Spanish in the house.
Nice.
And my mom picked me up from daycare, which is literally next door, right? The home daycare for the lady next door. She picked me up and I was still asking for leche and pan. And my mom, who only speaks English, was like, what the heck? I don't know. So my mom likes to tell the story that she would just tell me to point to whatever I was asking for in Spanish, because as African-American mom, she didn't know. Because, you know, in New Orleans, when she grew up, they learned French. So her Spanish was, you know, nil, right? Non-existent. Mm-hmm. So after, and that happened in my formative, when I was developing language.
Yeah.
That happened from like 0 to about 3.5, 4. Then once I stopped going to Maria's daycare, I actually went to like a public free preschool program.
Okay.
But the teachers there were from Martinique and the different islands. So they would teach us songs in French. So here I've already had the Spanish input, right? While I'm developing language, I had this English input. And now when I'm really putting sentences together and having dialogue, I'm learning French. So I actually had a really interesting, really organic way of taking in language, and that I don't think anybody anticipated that it would have such an important, you know, play such an important role in my life. Mm-hmm. So that's really how that started. But just in terms of like a print-rich environment, every house in the hood used to have magazines on the table. And so I couldn't imagine going to anyone's house and you didn't see like an Ebony magazine, Essence, Reader's Digest, Jet Beauty of the Week, like all these things. And so it was Redbook. I think Redbook was the housekeeping book. So every single house we went into always had books and reading. And so reading has just always been a part of my normal who I am. And so it's very weird now that you go to people's houses and they don't have any reading material.
I know.
It's just weird because I'm like, what is on your coffee table? Just candles? Like, where are your books? Where are your magazines? Right. So, you know, National Geographic's at school and, you know, all kind of stuff like that. So reading Yeah. So that's how I came to be a Spanish speaker. I don't think I ever told you that.
No, that is very interesting. I'm sifting through that a little bit. That's so interesting. I'm wondering, did you consider that to be normal? Like, did you know maybe that you were a bit of an exception with your friends, family, you know, I mean, the world at large, that you were multilingual? Was that just for you, just like, that's just the way it is, you're not? Or did you realize there's a little bit of an exception?
I never thought about it until I got older and we had Spanish class again in seventh grade, sixth and seventh grade. It never dawned on me as a kid because also too, when I was in kindergarten, there was a little African-American boy, but he looked African-American. But when his mom would pick him up after school, she would she'd speak to him in Spanish. His name was Enrique, but we called him Kiki. Never dawned on me as a child that Enrique is not an English American name. That's his name. His name is Kiki. That's what we call him. That's, you know, but they were Dominican. And I never, it never dawned on me as a little kid that this is not American. So she would come and teach us. I remember she taught me chocolate. I practiced chocolate so many times. Because when she came after school, I wanted to tell her, I remember chocolate, you know. And so it was weird because as the years went on, I would get these little nuggets of language. Mm-hmm. So I never really thought I was odd until I was in junior high school when I realized I'm the only Black kid in here who knows most of these words in Spanish. Like Spanish one was so boring to me because I was like, how do I know huevos? Like literally answers would come to me and I couldn't figure out why I had it. It was super A. I was helping the Latin kids and like, llega. They're like, how do you know llega? I'm like, I don't know. I just know it. I just know that that means you got here. I just know that. So so it was. And my teachers, my foreign language teachers are always tickled by me, but I didn't know they were tickled because I was African-American and it never dawned on me. And my mom had reminded me, she's like, what do you mean you don't know why it's so easy? She's like, remember Angelita and Maria? And I was like, oh yeah. So it never dawned on me until I got older and I realized that I was, I stuck out like a sore thumb. And then in college I was the only African-American in the Latin American studies department. And so like every time I went to Spanish class in college, they would tell me I was in the wrong class. Especially as you get higher and higher in the levels. Like, you know, we'd be in Spanish 5 something as a graduate course. And they're like, are you in the right spot? I'm like, this is 425, right? On Tuesday, Thursday. I'm like, yeah, this is the right class. So it just became normal for me for people to always, be surprised that I spoke Spanish. It just became my normal. So.
Well, you talk about earlier on in your life, you felt like maybe you're a little bit odd. Like, you know, there's where the language comes in, right? Única, unique. Mm-hmm. The only unique, right?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that though when you're the only one in class.
Yeah.
And people are like, what are you doing here? And you're like, I don't know, I just know the answers. Yeah, but like at 41, I feel like it's such a blessing. But there's just years when, especially as a teacher, I mean, we work together, people think you're there in the wrong class, they think you're the sub, they, you know. So
I got to think there's a lot of pride there as well. You know, maybe that first day of Spanish class, maybe you're writing your name on the board and maybe some of the kids are like, really?
Right.
I felt the same like as a gringo, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know,
of course.
My last name is not Spanish or anything like that. Yeah. So I love that where it's just kind of like, maybe they're waiting for me to open my mouth and it's like, oh, en serio, sí, habla este güero.
Right, este güey. Yeah. Hey. That's funny.
Yeah,
I do feel a lot of pride now. I feel like it's an accomplishment that I didn't take it as an accomplishment before. It was kind of became like a little bit of a negative at times. I usually don't speak Spanish to people. I'll say something to you, but normally I don't speak Spanish to people. Because it goes into this huge discussion that's half the time I don't want to get into. But I definitely take it as a sense of pride now when I've had the opportunity to learn and to travel and see so many other Morenos like myself who speak Spanish and it's they're everywhere. And I'm like, and having the opportunity to connect with other Black Spanish teachers has been so rewarding and fulfilling. That's what the internet has been awesome for me, just connecting with other Spanish, Spanish teachers who don't look like the norm, right? Whether they're American, African-American, whether they've married someone who was Latin. It's been just nice to have that community and that cohort because we all have the same shared experience of being like, you know, the weirdo, the only, el único.
Well, yeah, it seems like probably a lot of that is showing kind of the ignorance of just Americans in general, right? We think like that we forget like, oh, how about the Caribe? How about Guerrero in Mexico, right? With the African and, you know, origin. How about the fact that, you know, Shakira's Lebanese, you know, how about the Peruvian, you know, Japanese and Chinese and Jewish, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And on and on. So Definitely.
No, I think it's very, I think the Americans are very censored. And I think a lot of Latinos are very censored, right? Some, for some reason, they really love that dark haze when you talk about, you know, other ethnic groups coming in and their contributions to the, you know, to different countries. Brazil, Mexico, there's a huge African population in Mexico and in Veracruz in the south. And, you know, people never like to talk about it because it's very taboo for whatever reason. We need to get into all that. But I think it's sad because you have a whole richness and warmth of a culture that is so enriched. I mean, just think about America. If they didn't have, you know, Mexicans who shared their amazing culture with us and the food and the flavors and the spirit, you know, and it's like, why deny those things that make your culture even richer? Because it really makes people feel isolated when they don't realize there's a huge community of people just like them, you know, that make things better. So I think my mission has become to let people know about the African influence in Latin America, because I teach it every year and people are always like, what is this? And then I get to think about the Asian influence, right? And then I, so it's always super cool. Yeah. Wow.
Very interesting. We could, shoot, we could go off for a couple hours just on that, huh?
I'm right. It's heavy. It's pretty heavy. Yeah.
How about on the reading side of things? What were you reading as a kid? What, I mean, I know you talked about those great coffee table books. Who are some of the authors or writers who really thrilled you as a kid?
As a little guy, I really liked Sweet Valley High, R.L. Stein, The Babysitter's Club. I used to write stories. Like, I was one of the Babysitter Club writers. Like, I have all these stories from fourth grade. Like, I would write about these.
You're pointing like, are they right there? Are they right?
I was actually, because I was about to pull, I found like a whole pile of stories I used to write as a kid. And I wish I would have took them out. If we pause, I can go get them in. And I got like little A pluses on them. And but I think one of the first books that I can remember reading was Lord of Thunder, Hear My Cry.
Oh yeah.
And I think a lot of people have read that book. But I remember the Scholastic book people would come to my school and I would get so excited. I know I could only have like a sheet of stickers and a book, right? Because money was tight. So I would try and get the best book I could get. And I ordered that book. Oh my God, so many times my mom was like, didn't we already have this book? No. But I read that. And then in fourth grade, I read Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
And that plus Rule of Thunder, Hear My Cry, the two of them together in fourth grade, I remember just my mind in terms of reading and my ability to understand English language, because Roll of Thunder was one context, right? Written from a Latin, from a Southern English dialect, right? And I totally got it. And then I read Dickens and as a 10-year-old, Dickens, And I, with the exception of a few words, I totally understood the higher, you know, the higher vocabulary. And just those two together were everything for me.
Dang. Yeah. Dickens as a 10-year-old, that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, we had but you know, my mom would have these books at home too. We had The Hobbit at home. We had, what's the wolf book?
Call of the Wild, White Fang.
Yeah, so we had Call of the Wild at home as well. Okay. And I would like thumb through them because The Hobbit was a little hard for my brain to wrap around, but Christmas Carol, I totally took to that like a duck to water. And I was so like, the Cratchits, what's going to happen with Bob Cratchits?
Right.
Like, it's so interesting.
Right.
So
and,
I'm
and,
weird.
And we all know that's the best of the Disney is the Christmas Carol, the Mickey's Christmas Carol, but that.
Mickey's Christmas Carol is everything. That is Fire 3000.
Jacob Cratchit or whatever, right?
Yes. It's good stuff. But yeah, so I had a lot of, I was blessed to have just a lot of words around as a kid. Always, always. Never denied books, never. Candy, yeah, but books, never.
So you said you were writing, you know, Babysitter's Club, I guess what fan fiction you might even call it, right?
Absolutely.
What how did the writing and the reading continue into high school and into college? What were you interested in? What was thrilling you then in those days?
So I think in high school I stopped reading books and novels a lot less, and I picked up a lot more magazines, right? Because that was like the end thing to do.
Sure.
But I would continue to write stories about my life and how I thought they would turn out. So when I was in high school, I didn't have any relationship with my dad. So we would be in AP English and AP this and AP that. I would actually write stories as, you know, and finish the tale off, like him and I meeting and then what would happen and what happened after that. Or if I wanted to, you know, if I was a guy at school who I had a crush on, I create this whole story about him and I having this romance. And, so I would just take what wasn't happening and recreate it like in a story. And I would turn those in for credit. And those would, you know, I always got good grades for, you know, my stories and short, you know, short stories, short writings, things like that.
Yeah. So like, as you like studied in college, like what did you study in college? You know, were you studying Spanish? Were you reading literature in Spanish? You know, what kind of stuff were you reading at the undergrad level?
So really interesting. So I started off as an international business major and with a Spanish minor. And so I had all these business classes. And so initially I was reading accounting books and finance books. And the only classes that would excite me were my Economics of the Caribbean class. Okay. I got into that class big time. And then I talked to one of my professors and she said, well, maybe you're more of a humanities person, you are a business person. And I was like, oh, no, no, I'm going to rule the world. And she said, well, take a couple of more humanities classes. And so, you know, then I'm in, you know, a Cuba communism class, and I'm reading all this Marxist, and I'm reading all these things about Fidel and the United States and Truman. And I'm like, whoa. Then I started taking a little bit more of this. So then that's how I switched from international business. In my senior year, I switched to Latin American studies,
okay,
and Afro-ethnic studies. And once I did that, geez, I had just A's across the board. I was reading African proverb novels. I'm reading, you know, books about the Vietnam War from a Vietnam woman's perspective. Again, reading a lot of history of Latin America, a lot of politics, you know, political writing. Just got into so much more of the humanities in terms of my reading and writing. And then the biggest book I read that was Spanish-wise was 100 Years of Solitude in Spanish. That one was hard. That one was hard. Yes. I had to use a dictionary, right? There was no Google Translate yet. That one was real challenging for me. And I probably should go back and reread it now with a few more years of Spanish experience under my belt. I should probably reread it just so I'd get it better. Mm-hmm. But that was the biggest novel I can remember reading. And then that's when I went to live in Costa Rica for a little while. And then obviously everything is in Spanish. That was a little bit of a struggle. But yeah. I got into a lot of cultural and political, a lot of political books, yeah.
Pura vida, right?
Sí, pura vida.
Pura vida, pura vida. The story goes that Gabriel Garcia Marquez was on vacation with his family and had the inspiration for Cien Años de Soledad. And like turned the car around type of thing and drove back and wrote it in some, you know, ridiculously short period of time.
Uh-huh.
They say some of the story is maybe a little extra, but we all hate him, right, for writing that incredible book.
Right. How dare he make it sound better? Oh, I know. I read a few times on Like Water for Chocolate. I know that's a salacious tale, but I was thoroughly entertained in college.
Yeah, so I had to teach that in a high school class. And
really?
Yeah.
They allowed you to?
Woo, yeah, that was tough.
You couldn't show the movie though, like you can't.
No. No, that's
crazy. That,
salacious is the word, yes. Great book.
Fantastic.
Right? Buenas recetas y todo, but yeah, that was. Yeah.
Wow, I'm surprised that passed the board.
Right? Yeah. Those are the old days.
Things
have changed a bit. Not that we're that old that we've taught for that long, but anyways.
But that's how much change has occurred, right?
Right. Exactly. 2021, you know, Karin, CJ, you know, you're now, what, 32 years old? What,
32 what, and a half, baby. 30,
sorry, 32 and a half. What kind of things are you reading? What kind of things are give you chills of will these days?
I love the chills of the will. So currently I'm reading books about how to reduce, you know, my book I'm reading right now is The 4-Hour Workweek, how to get, you know, how to reclaim your time and monetize that. Reading a lot of books on how to monetize your time and your skill set that you already have. I'm also in the middle of reading this book. People keep gifting me books. Literally, I go to the mail and I get new books. So this one is How Any Startup Can Achieve Customer Growth. So I'm learning about how to do startups. Now everything has shifted from culture to how to make money and get my time back.
Right.
So that's what I'm reading right now, but I'm definitely into them.
Nice. Yeah. Well deserved. So like, first of all, congratulations, because you're a published author.
Thank you.
Like your name is on a book, like multiple books, like not just a book. Right.
Which is crazy.
So tell me about the inspiration. The book is bilingual. The book is a children's book, and you can explain better than I. Like, I know that even within children's books, there's maybe even subgenres. You know, like each different age, etc. So tell me about the inspiration for Mi Mamá Es Una Super Heroína. Sí, dime.
So I wanted it's an homage to my mother. It's an homage to superhero parents who make it happen in spite of A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I didn't just want to say to my mom, oh, I appreciate, you know, I've told her that for years. Oh, I appreciate what you've done for me and the sacrifices, you know, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do something more. I wanted something, honestly, that would outlive me, a la Hamilton. But I wanted something that was going to outlive me and that my grandkids could see. And even if technology failed tomorrow and they couldn't see what my mom looked like, they could see her in cartoon. They could see her and know what she did and how she inspires me daily. So that was the inspiration for that. And then the subgenre is, I'm super into superheroes.
Hmm.
Always have been. I'll take an X-Men, a Superman, a Spider-Man, a Batgirl. I love them all.
How's WandaVision? Have you even checked out WandaVision?
No, let me write that down. WandaVision?
Yeah, I mean, I'm somebody who doesn't know the world of superheroes too much, but I believe it's like a Marvel. It might be the other one. What's the other one besides Marvel?
I don't know. Marvel?
You know what I mean? There's like two companies or something. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Give me a second. Universal.
Sounds right. DC.
DC Comics.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You can see that. I mean, you're more knowledgeable than I am, but yeah, I've heard things. I've heard good things.
I'm looking it up.
About WandaVision.
I'm looking up WandaVision. But yeah, but I have this whole plan in my head of little kids, superheroes, and the superheroes in their life. And I also do just wanted to acknowledge that kids don't have to look to celebrities or athletes to find like supers. They're literally in your neighborhood. It's the guy who cuts the grass. It's the person who delivers the mail. It's your dentist. It's your teacher. It's your mom and dad. It's your grandparents. It's your older siblings who help you, who let you get in the bed with them at nighttime if you're scared, you know? Right. Right. Those are the superheroes that we should be glorifying. Not that celebrities aren't great, right? I've done my own share of acting. I love it. But at the end of every day, your heroes are right there. And it doesn't have to, you know, be on television. So that was important for me to talk about as well.
That's really cool. I would guess that it wasn't something that you thought of like a year and a half ago and just put down on paper. I'm sure it's been brewing for a long time.
Yeah, I've rewritten this book 8 times.
Okay.
And I started about 12, 13 years ago, honestly. And I just sat on. I wrote it, and I sat on it, and I sat on it because I was like, "Does it sound too babyish? Does it sound too corny?" Like, I wasn't sure how it would be received. And so finally, I was just like, during coronavirus, I had time, so found an illustrator, and we vibed really well.
Yeah.
So that's what we came up with.
Well, the illustrations are beautiful. They're. I was trying to figure out how to describe it. They're like. There's just like a lot of focus on the characters. It's just like they're there front and center. It's very colorful, you know. You can see the expressions on their faces, etc. How did you find, is it Sheila? Is it Sheila Alejandra?
Sheila.
How did you find her? See.
So I've gone through 4 different illustrators in the last 12 years with completely different styles. Watercolors, some who are super extreme comic book writers, so the characters are very comic booky.
I see.
And they just didn't work out for whatever reason. I mean, I can share with you like 4 different covers that you'd be like, oh my God, the covers are so different. So literally I was sitting on the couch. Well, I fixed my mind to get the book done in a year. So this time last year, I was like, I'm getting this book done. I don't care what happened, blah, blah, blah. And literally once I said that, she popped up in my Instagram.
Nice.
As an ad. And I was like, I was looking at the universe like, what the heck? Like literally it was like within 2 nights after I set my mind to it. She popped in. I checked her out. She's in the Philippines, actually. Reached out to her in the Philippines, and I just said, "Hey, I like what I've seen. You know, she does a lot of characters of color, different Latino color, Indian characters, African American characters." And I was like, "Okay, this is definitely somebody that I want to work with because she already knows skin tones and knows, you know, slight changes in noses or expressions and things like that." So we got on the phone and we just kind of made it happen. But she's working on the next book right now. I have another one I'm doing and she's working on it as we speak. So
that's very cool. I wonder about the choice in rhyming. You know, rhyme in English. Obviously, to rhyme in both languages wouldn't really be possible. It'd be forced. Wondering about that kind of decision. You know, I'm sure that probably affected what age group you were writing to also.
Yes. Yeah, so the first 4 versions were not rhyming.
Okay.
And I didn't think they were enjoyable. They're very similar, right? They just didn't rhyme. But I didn't think that a kid would want to remember the lines or read it again and again and again. I was like, well, what would make me as a kid? So I actually went and bought about 30 children's books just to see what would appeal to me.
Research, right?
Research, expensive research, but. Yeah. I can send the books to your kids because I have them in a box. But I did a lot of research on like what was appealing in terms of colors and what I liked. And I just thought, I said, you know what? Let me just see if I can rhyme a couple pages. And who knew it? I was a rhymesmith. I didn't know that I was. And it was actually, once I started rhyming, it really started coming easy. And I would laugh and giggle. And then once I lowered the age group, I was able to have more fun with it and be more imaginative and more creative because little kids will still believe. If I do it for older students, they're like, she's not a superhero. And I'd be just devastated. So the younger I went, the more creative I could be, the more touched, you know, I think it was more special that way. But it's crazy because all the adults that read it, they're all teary-eyed. And I'm like, guys, this is for the kids. And they're like, but my mom used to do that too. And so it's really cute.
Well, I know you're a high school teacher, so you know you don't work with the younger ones, but you can tell you're a teacher. I mean, I even think going back to when you're talking about being a kid and you knew the songs in Spanish or French or whatever, like that's everything, right?
Yes.
And I'm guessing you probably agree with me, like very few times as a high school teacher have I felt like something was too childish for my group.
Yeah.
Right?
Like rarely. Yeah, we got all the childish material.
Right? So, I mean, when I'm teaching allegory in my English class, we'll do Green Eggs and Ham.
Absolutely.
Right? And for them, it's like a trip down memory lane. So that's so cool. Yeah, singing and rhymes and all that, like it works. It works as a teacher. Works. So why not in a children's book? Yeah.
Why not? And it's just enjoyable, right? Mm-hmm. It's just enjoyable. And I was actually writing last night and I write outside. Why? I don't know. I was just sitting outside writing in the cold and I got stuck on a word that didn't rhyme. And I took a pen and paper and I tried dance, pants, crants, dance, mans, gants. And I was like, this isn't it. And literally my neighbor's like over the fence, like hearing me calling out all these rhyming words. And he's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, don't talk to me now. I'm like, I got to get a word that rhymes. I got to find it. So I found a word that rhymed, but it took me a while. But I love the rhyming. I actually started writing some children's raps in Spanish.
Huh.
Those will be out later next year.
You have your own SoundCloud or?
No, that's another thing I need to get on top of. You know, I have 1,000 projects, but I will. Got to get those copywritten before I share that with the world.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So Eminem had a segment with Anderson Cooper back in the day. Uh-huh. If you can ignore the extreme misogyny, like he talks about like how he rhymes. It's kind of cool.
What was the overall gist of his plan?
I forget the exact word, but he talked about some of those words that you feel like they cannot be rhymed.
Yes.
And he would do like, what's the term? Like an internal rhyme, or he'd do, you know, a near rhyme and all that. So
yeah, I do a lot of nears. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right. I'm sure people kind of give you some lenience. Like, all right, we're leaning on that. We get it. We get it.
I did try and rhyme it in Spanish. So that's actually what held it up maybe like another 3 to 4 months is because I did put it in Spanish. And then I went back and tried to have the same rhyme and, you know, reason and count and number on both sides. It didn't work for me. There are a couple pages on the Spanish side that ended up rhyming by accident. But for the most part, I couldn't. That'll be my next challenge with my next series of books is to get the rhyme, the pedometer and meter. Is that what it is?
I know what you're saying.
Meter and something else. I'm going to try and really get that down for the next series.
Pentameter. Of books. Pentameter.
Pentameter. That's what it is. Thank you.
Okay.
I really want to get the pentameter down in Spanish. I know I can do it. It's just going to take me to clear my mind, go sit at a beach or something and you know, let the words come to me.
How excited was your mom? Was it a surprise for your mom when the book was published?
It was a surprise to her when I sent her a rough combination of the when the illustrator put the words on the pages and we just had the outlines of the characters. They hadn't even been colored in yet. And she was teary eyed and over the moon. And she, you know, tells everybody her daughter writes children's books. I said, Mom, it's one book.
Singular.
Calm down. But you know, she's over the moon. And then when I was able to send her the pictures that were colored, you know, fully illustrated them. And they were just so much more, you know, they really brought them to life. She was just in awe and surprised. And I was happy to see her so happy about a book. Like it was
cool. Man, a beautiful thing. That's so cool.
Thank you.
So cool. Tell us a little bit about the storyline. I mean, you have told us the basics. Mom's a superhero. Like how so? What makes her a superhero?
So it's pretty cool. So the mom's a superhero. She does everyday super things, right? Mm-hmm. So the little girl, her daughter doesn't understand how she knows all the words of the homework. How can she cook all this amazing gourmet food? How can she, you know, pick up the couch and clean underneath it on Saturday morning? She doesn't understand, like, only superheroes could move furniture and only superheroes know all the answers and all the recipes. And then, like, they have a car that's pretty crappy. Their car is barely running. And the little girl sees it as an amusement park ride. But the mom is embarrassed that the car is, you know, backfiring and smoking. And the little girl's like, oh, the smoke is amazing. It's so cool. So, that's basically what the book is about. Just the little girl seeing her mom do everyday things and just marveling and how she can do them all. She's not afraid of spiders. She's not afraid of the dark, you know, all those kind of things.
When you were writing it, so Justine is the narrator, the protagonist. Yes. How old did you imagine Justine to be?
Initially, I imagined her to be maybe 8 years old.
Okay.
But I lowered her to first grade to about six and a half because I wanted everything to be even more magical than it could be. Mm-hmm. And I also started thinking when I worked at Disneyland, how at what age did I remember watching the kids lose the magic in their eyes? And it was always around six, seven-ish. Before they start being like, it's just Snow White.
Right.
But, you know, if you get them at, you know, kindergarten, first grade, they're still like, oh my God, it's Snow White. And so that's how I described it to the illustrator when I wanted on the cover, when I wanted the little girl to look at her mom. Uh-huh. I wanted her to have those Disneyland princessy eyes. She looks at her like, aw. I definitely lowered her. But every single situation in the book, I lived it already. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember each and every page. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I love me some smoothies, but with kelp, really?
Very good, very good. Well, that makes it current, right? Because everybody's on a health kick, so that makes it a little current.
Okay. No, so should be good.
I had to make it a little current.
I wonder how much do you feel like you stuck to like a formula? Like I know generally, I don't know as well as you do about like the formula and the structure of children's books, but you know, like the whole like, you know, start your conflict at this page and. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it should be 32 pages or 16. Like, I wonder how much you you subscribe to that idea that it needs to be structured and formatted, or if you're a little bit more, independent, I guess.
So I threw that all away. I probably spent about a year or two joining different book groups and different author groups and watching people break down, protagonists, climax, conclusion, all these different elements that go into a story. Mm-hmm. And when I sat there and tried to put my thoughts into that type of pattern, I really got stuck and stalled. And I couldn't write that way because my life didn't unfold that way. And so when I just sat down and wrote about, the 7 or 10 most awesomest moments that I remember as a kid, that's when the story came together. Okay. So I couldn't tell you which page the climax is on and what page concludes it. But I know those elements are in there because we've read a billion stories, so it kind of gets stuck in your mind. Mm-hmm. But I think teaching helped me to organize the book. Like just thinking about primero, entonces, luego, finalmente.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I was able to do it like that. Like first she does this and then she does that. When you go to book clubs, and I've joined so many over the years to try and push my book out.
Right.
It didn't work. I don't work that way, I think. So maybe that's why different book companies are like, we don't know about this book because it's not in that standard format. But
sure.
No way, I couldn't do that.
Well, no, that's great. Yeah, the book does not suffer for that. I mean, it's not a problem. It's not an issue at all.
Thank you.
It comes off great. I love, some of the stuff about doing it bilingually is that you get, we talked about the rhymes. Mm-hmm. There's some of the subtleties of like translation. Like I love like you have, No sé cómo se dice onomatopeya en español, pero...
Yo también. I think it's the same, onomatopeya or something.
Algo así. Es como grr, y tan.
So that was hard. I actually had to look those up.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like trictic boom. That's like, I really had to look up those in the online because those, I forget in English that, I can't, vroom, vroom. I forget that's English.
Right.
I was thinking vroom wasn't the sound that it always makes. In other phonemes, those sounds don't exist. So I had to.
Sure.
Yeah, that's where the grr came.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember my mind being blown when I was like, dogs say wow, wow in Espanol.
Right. That's exactly like, it. The wow, wow. The ha, ha, ha.
Right?
No, the he, he, he. What is it? G. You know what I'm saying? J, A, J, A, J.
Sí, como jota, jota, a, jota. Uh-huh. Sí. Sí.
Yeah.
I wonder if you felt like you were writing the Spanish of like Ecuador or Mexico or Colombia or La República Dominicana. Like, did you feel like a push to like generalize or standardize the Spanish?
I did to a certain degree. So I naturally write in a Costa Rican Spanish tense.
Okay.
So I went ahead and I wrote it in Spanish to the best of my abilities. And then I had it edited by two separate editors, one from Argentina and then one from Mexico.
Okay.
And they had two completely separate styles of wording. And I was like, what the heck? This is worse than English. So I just kind of combined my Costa Rican background, which I think is pretty neutral with their very stylized backgrounds, and try to put it together. But I hope that even the use of mama and mami, those, I had to really think about that, right? Because I wanted to do it right in Spanish. I didn't just want to type something and just turn it in.
Right.
So like I learned mommy is like what a child would say to their mom that's really sweet and loving. But sure. Mama is like a little bit more formal. How you present you and say, I wouldn't say this is my mommy, you know, te presento mi mamá.
Sí.
You know, just little nuances like that I had to be mindful of, but yeah.
I know when I say Central American Spanish, I know even that's, you know, there's more specific. I speak of like Guatemala, mm-hmm. El Salvador. They use a lot of like more usted que tú y vos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is Costa Rica the same as far as more formal on the general or general?
So Costa Ricans tend to be very proper, okay. But they cut the words off.
See,
So it's the trying to figure out what the word was before they cut it. So
yo quiero los libros, por favor. Yo quiero los libros.
See, yeah, and you're like, it sounds like LIVRO, and you're like, wait, like refri. They use like compu, refri. Chiquitita, everything is a diminutive, and everything is a diminutive.
Okay.
Papitas, panquequitas, and you're just like, what is the original word before you eat at it? Like, what, you know, what was it? Like in Costa Rica, they call me la chiquita alta, so, which is funny, right? It's a play on words, like the short tall.
Sí.
So just trying not to use too many diminutives, and then trying to be, you know, trying to use as much of a general Spanish. Choose general Spanish words as possible. It was a little bit challenging. So it did take me a little while because I would read it and I was like, that's not how they say it. Is that how, you know, you second guess your abilities whenever you're writing in a foreign language.
But. Sure. Yeah. So I always remember my professor in a college course for writing for children. I was talking about, you know, yes, the aesthetics matter. Yes. The beauty of writing, but there's also a barcode on the book. Right.
Right.
trying to get that paper.
Trying to get right. That.
So I wonder how you found the balance, and also a good chance for you to shout it out, like where can we buy it, you know.
Oh, cool.
That kind of thing. Yeah
no, definitely. It's not on Amazon yet. I'm still selling it directly to customers, so I'll give you the link to our website that sells directly to customers.
Awesome. Okay.
But no, I knew that I hadn't seen children's books with melanated characters on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's an all black book, you know, all African-American. And I wanted kids who were Indian to see the book and think that could be them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted African-American children to look at it and say, oh, that could be me. Mm-hmm. I wanted, you know, mixed families to look at the book. And so that one of the kids could say, oh my God, I'm on the cover of that book.
Right.
So I didn't want it just to be an African-American book. I wanted it to be a book that had characters of color that any child or family could possibly see themselves in the book.
Sure.
So they're different skin tones. Like the mom is lighter, the little girl's darker. The older sister is a little bit lighter. Their noses are different. Just like little nuances like that. But I definitely, and I think like the bright colors, a lot of books are pastel.
Okay.
No, I didn't like the pastel stuff. I wanted it bright and bold, and I wanted you to see her frizzy hair, and I wanted you to see her getting her hair combed, because I know there's some little girl that's going to say, oh my God, my hair gets combed like that too. Like,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I put what I wanted to see on the cover and let the chips fall where they may. And it's been pretty popular without, you know, overthinking it. So I've been really blessed in that aspect.
That's great. You've been featured in a couple magazines. Kid Leo.
But yeah, no, it's been a couple. It was actually an Indian lady reached out to me, and she wanted to profile the book on an Indian platform.
Nice.
Because again, the characters are, you know, characters of color.
Yeah.
I had a young lady in Vancouver. No. In Quebec, a little African American girl in Quebec. She put it on her Quebec channel.
Nice.
And I got a few orders from Canada, which is really, really cool. So yeah, so hopefully there's a lady in Australia who bought one.
Nice.
So it's a couple copies lingering in the world right now. It's a few copies.
I'm really excited. International. So Pitbull is Mr. Worldwide and you're Miss Worldwide.
I'm Miss Worldwide.
Señorita Mundial.
Okay. Mundial.
Yeah.
Hopefully I want to get it, I want to get it translated into different languages. So I love to put it in French.
Nice.
And then move it. I think for English and French is my next, will be the next translation, and then I want to do it in maybe Mandarin would be the third.
Cool.
Yeah, so we'll see.
What how cool has it been to read it with family members and friends?
It's very cool. I like to see people's reaction. I like to give them the book and then don't say anything and just like watch them.
Uh-huh.
And it's always about maybe the second or third page, and people are like, Like, I'm like, yes, I got another one. So it's very cool. I just, I haven't got any bad comments at all. I just need, you know, people to take a picture of their kid reading the book and send it to me.
Okay.
But I've sold so far. I mean, it's not a lot compared to like what I'm planning to do in the future, but I've sold about, over 100 copies so far, just from me distributing, not actually like, you know, having a bigger audience, but yeah, but I hope next year I really want to participate in the Festival of Books.
Oh, that's a great, what a great weekend. Oh yeah.
Oh, I love the Festival of Books. So yeah, definitely hopefully next year, cause it got canceled this year, obviously.
Yeah. But yeah.
Hoping to be out there in my little tent, slinging my books, hardcover and softcover.
Well, no, I'm really excited. I would love to go, you know, whenever it's back in session, just, you know, I'll travel down there. And if you're there, heck yeah.
All right, cool. Oh, man. So excited.
That is
yeah,
so
definitely
cool.
Doing that. But definitely I'm going to get it switched into a hardcover and get it blown out to 11 by 17. And so we'll have different options, but
Yeah. And when I promote this episode, I'll put the links all over the place and
thank you.
So they can pick one up. And I'm looking forward to gifting it to a couple, you know, friends and family as well.
I'll send you a couple copies. Yeah, I'll send you a couple copies.
I love it.
Absolutely. So my thank you. But yeah, it's really cool. I'm super excited. I'm ready. I'm working on the second one. My teacher's a superhero. That one I'm really, really excited about. I get to introduce new characters and that was really cool.
Well, yeah. Are you trying to keep that close to the vest, or tell us a little bit about that?
No, it doesn't have to be too close. Just real general. I'm doing my teacher's a superhero. It's the character Justine, right? So the main protagonist. She's she's looking in her community again, and she's thinking her teacher now is a superhero. And you know, the teacher's she can just do really cool things that, you know, Justine just knows she's got to be a superhero, because who can play soccer like that?
Right.
Who can, you know, who knows all the math problem answers? Teacher does. So super duper duper excited about that one. Yeah.
Oh,
that
very will be cool. Done. Very cool. Are you setting a deadline for yourself, or is it kind of like the chips will fall as they may?
The deadline is by my birthday. So by May, that one has to be completely written and finished and edited and whatnot. The illustrations have already begun. You know, you can always start illustrating early. Illustrations have begun, but she has to be completely written by May, and by the end of this year. We'll have that one in print, and I'll have to be able to package them together and start working on the third one.
So in Ernest Hemingway's, you know, The Old Man and the Sea, he talks about in Cuba, they say when the sea is crazy and wild, they call it el mar. Mm-hmm. And when the sea is, you know, tranquilo y todo, they say la mar.
Sí.
So I think I heard it correctly that you called the coming book She.
She.
Beautiful. So it's going to be a beautiful, calm, relaxing, helpful, positive book.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be fun. It's awesome.
Fun. That is really cool.
Really fun.
I wonder if maybe you could read a little bit from Mi Mamá.
Oh, sí. Puedo hacerlo.
That would be excellent.
So that's the cover, guys.
Yeah. Ooh.
That's my cover. Let's see. Do you want me to read in English or Spanish?
Las dos.
Okay.
Tal vez dos o tres páginas o más. No importa. Sí. Tenemos tiempo.
Okay. Okay. So estoy a comenzar. Voy a comenzar con el principio. Okay. Alrighty. So, on the outside, my mother looks like any other mama. She is sweet, pretty, and super smart. Mother makes me laugh, and she is good at art. But only I know the truth. She is more than you think. I believe that my mother is a superhero who wears pink. Por afuera, mi mamá se parece a cualquier otra mamá. Ella es dulce, linda y muy inteligente. Mi mamá me hace reír y es buena con el arte. Pero solo yo sé la verdad. Ella es más de lo que tú piensas. Yo creo que mi mami es una superheroína que usa el color rosa. My mother is a superhero and no one knows but me. She does not fly, become invisible, or move things with her mind. That is because she's a superhero of a whole different kind. Mi mami es una superheroína y nadie lo sabe además de mí. Ella no vuela, no es invisible o mueve cosas con su mente, pero ella es una superheroína de un tipo diferente. See, that would end up rhyming, but I wasn't trying to rhyme it. It just worked out that way. I have tried telling my sister, but she does not believe me. Big sisters always think they are smarter, but one day she will see. I am not wrong. Mom is superhero strong. She can move the couch without any help and makes weird smoothies with broccoli and kelp. Your favorite. But yeah, that's basically it. I don't want to give away the whole pie, but that's basically it. I'll be the end. All mothers are amazing, she says. One day you'll see. I love my superhero mother and she loves me. Todas las maestras. Think about the second one. Todas las madres son increíbles, dice mi mami. Un día lo verás. Yo amo a mi mami superheroína y ella me ama a mí. It's my favorite book. Pick it up, guys. It's a great read. You'll read it over and over and over again.
Beautiful. I'm definitely gonna have to read it with my kids again tonight.
Okay. Take a picture. Let me see if I can add them to my
love. Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Thank you. Congratulations again. I mean, again, you have a book in the world. It's in Australia. It's in India. You talk about it's in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, people close to you, people who you'd never met are reading it. And obviously it's got a beautiful message. And
thank you, Fred.
You know, we're in the same boat. I would love to write about my mom. I remember that I wrote a short piece in college for my first workshop and I was all ready to go. And the story got ripped apart.
Yes.
Rightfully so, though.
Okay.
The subject matter was beautiful. It was written in a way that just wasn't, you know, it was cheesy. It was corny. It didn't fit, right?
Right.
For a college classroom, but yours fit.
Thank you.
It's beautifully done. The bilingual touch. Thank you. Know, representing characters of color.
Yeah.
All of the above. It checks all the boxes. So
thank you.
Congratulations and continued great luck with the rest of your writing.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Please continue writing your mom's story. Take what you started with, even if it's crappolini, and flip it.
Right? There you go. There you go. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to chat with you and hear about this creation from beginning to end, and looking forward to the second one.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, Mr. Real. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And again, I'll be promoting this very much. You're going to want to pick up a copy of Me and Mama. My mother is a superhero. Superhero is all in caps. Thank you so much for listening to episode 44. It was a pleasure to speak with CJ Charles, author of the said book and author of the coming book and heck of a teacher as well. If you have enjoyed the Chills with Will podcast, please pause your podcast player right now and go to Apple to leave me a nice review. You can also ask for the podcast by name using Alexa and find it on Spotify and on Amazon Music. Follow me on Instagram, where I'm at Chills at Will podcast, or on Twitter, where I'm at Chills at Will PO1. This is a passion project of mine, a DIY operation, and I'd love for your help in promoting what I'm convinced is a unique and spirited look at an often ignored art form. The intro song for the Chills at Will podcast is Wind Down instrumental version, and the other song played on this episode was Hoops instrumental by Matt Whitehour, and both great songs are used through archesaudio.com. So for now, I hope that these quarantine days bring you texts by great writers like CJ Charles, writers with mad skills whose work gives you chills at will.